All right, guys, welcome to Shift and Steer. We are down a man. We are down one Fanshawe today. He's, I think he's in Arizona, is on his way to Arizona or doing something at his mom's house.
Rhett.
So it's the Aaron and Matt show today.
It's the A&M show. Yeah. It's the AM show, yeah.
We've got some fun things to talk about. We get to talk smack about Brad because he's not here. But before we get started, a word from our friends at Geico. You guys may own a home or rent a home. Chances are it's one of those. Well, either way, it could be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policy with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And we all know that's a good thing because you have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All right, sports fans, Podcast One has two great new shows for you to check out. Seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry is bringing big guests and great NBA commentary on the Big Shot Bob Pod.
The Brooklyn Nets remind me of Oklahoma Sooner football, and we got to have to outscore you every time, and that's what the Brooklyn Nets are.
Hey, you got Steve Nash at the helm. You got D'Antoni. They ain't thinking about no defense.
And Eric Bolling and Brett Favre come together for Bowling with Favre. Everything from sports to politics to business and culture.
Any insight on what Aaron plans to do in Green Bay?
What I read into his comments were simply frustration. Nothing more than that.
Subscribe now to the Big Shot Bob Pod and Bowling with Favre on the Podcast One app, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And rate and review the shows on Apple for your chance to be featured.
And places with your host Brad Fanshawe, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
All right, so
nice. I'm trying an egg chai, Matt, and it's not so good. It's kind of squashy. My wife ordered it. She said, "You're gonna love this chai." It ain't so good. It's kind of like leaves a film in your mouth, and it tastes kind of like squash was the base, you know?
It's not my favorite either. I don't know what you're saying. She's trying to keep you healthy or something.
Well, I promised her on the ride down. Yes, it was my 50s first birthday the other day. And on the ride down, I said, "Okay, honey, let's have a little talk." And of course, I love doing that to her because she panics. And I'm like, "I know you want to try some food stuff. And I know that meat is falling off our list. Misha's been developing some weird aversion to meat, and it's really bumming her out because she's a total carnivore. But she's kind of backing off the meat because it's getting kind of funky for her. And I've kind of liked that. I've been that way for a couple of years. Whenever I get a funky piece of meat, I'm out. I'm done. So yes, here's to the first day of I'm not going to have a nice journey.
Yeah, no. Well, at the beginning of the show, she popped in. She's like, "Hey, Matt, are you still running? And because I like your post." And I'm like, "Aaron's sitting right there." I was like, "She's probably going, maybe you should run too."
No, she knows I'm not a runner, except when I'm being chased by a bear.
Right.
Then she said, "Wow, I've never seen you run so fast." I said, "Well, a fucking bear was chasing me." Right. And then I proceeded to fall over and break my hip and my arm, and I got all fucked up, but I'm alive. Bear's dead. I'm good. He's not.
So I wanted to get into a few things. And one of the things that, you and I were actually very into, was the Land Rover Defender. I drove the Defender not long ago. I know you're a Land Rover fan.
Big time.
And I know there's like a little bit of a funky styling going on. I think it looks good.
You mean the one that Misha says looks like it has a window sticker at the back?
Yes, I was just going to say, the one that Misha's like, I don't understand the white sticker. Like, you don't have to get it white.
We were just in Marin, and there's a million of them. We saw probably dozens of them. It was awesome because we could, you know, kind of see them in person. But every time she's like, I keep thinking it's a window sticker. I'm like, come on, honey, that's in the front window.
Well, it is an interesting styling characteristic. Yeah. I don't disagree with her. I think she's pretty much right on.
It's a little weird.
Like it's some sort of, like it's removable. Like it should be gone. But
yeah. And when the box is on it, you're like, so is that a bigger lock box to get into it? Like, is there a code on there for the dealer to get in the keys or?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Is there a storage?
That a
bin
stormtrooper
on the
attachment?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is of course I drove it. I even did this kind of like driving event with the guys, the Audi guys did a car show and they did an event out here. I didn't have anything sporty. So I was like tearing up the canyons and everybody was in like NSXs and sports cars and Supras. And I was in the Defender just trying to keep up with the whole group.
How was it?
It was good. It was fun. I mean, it's interesting because even an off-road truck like that, as you're trying to throw it around the corners, everything was just sort of like rollover protection and everything else. Like it has a lot of body roll, but it doesn't really scare you that much when you're, you know, because you're like, eh, it's a modern vehicle. It's going to be fine. Like you really got to put some effort into it and trying to get it to flip or anything. But so it actually handled the cars well. And I'm sure the stunt drivers out there that we work with in the space, Jeremy Fry and Tanner Faust and all these guys, I'm sure they're going to be like, yeah, it's fine. It's going to be fine. They're like, I could drift that thing, spin it around. It's, you know, because of modern day technology.
Give me the skinny steelies. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the interesting part is Land Rover just announced more Defenders in their lineup, including a V8 model, which I believe is 518 horsepower.
Impressive.
Because I forgot what I was driving, like the 295, somewhere around the 300 horsepower.
But don't forget, you need 500 horsepower when the thing weighs like 6,000 pounds.
The V6 wasn't
they aren't that
slow.
Heavy.
The V6 wasn't slow. 300 horsepower, whatever it was.
It was
fine. But the idea of the supercharged V8, I believe it's the supercharged V8 that they're doing again from the Jaguar Land Rover lineup.
Yeah.
518 horsepower.
Nice.
That'll
get you up the hill climb. But you know, the funny thing is,
I misspoke on the six cylinder. It's not a V6. It's an inline six, and it was 395 horsepower. So it was 400.
That's a lot.
Almost 400. And now it's 518. But the extra 120 something horsepower is going to be nice.
Yeah, it's going to be costly, but it's going to be nice. But, I'll tell you, we have a car in servicing, so they gave us a loaner. So we have a Macan, just a base model Macan, it's got the four-cylinder turbo. And we have the six-cylinder twin turbo, which is pretty damn fast. And, it doesn't have the pickup that the turbo six does. You know, it's lacking a couple hundred horsepower. But, for a four-cylinder in a vehicle of that size and weight, I mean, it gets up and goes. So I have to say, you know, I wasn't a fan of the 718 because it's a four cylinder, and then that's why I got a 981 because it's the last of the six cylinder hurrahs, you know. But damn, the 718, the 718 fast. I mean, it's really fast, but it doesn't sound the same. You know, you're definitely missing some of those muscles, but they're really tuning these small. You know, these smaller, what we perceive as smaller, you know, CCs, the four cylinders, they still have big pistons. You know, a lot of these, the configurations are, the piston size is bigger, the stroke's different. I mean, they're getting a lot more out of them. They're not what we think traditionally. You know, it's not an Alfa Romeo four cylinder, right? Yeah. Where you got to ring it to 8,000 RPM before you even get anything.
Yeah.
It's a different world. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, look, if, you know, the Defender, when it was released with the inline six, they wanted to do sort of a stripped down base version at a better price point and then work right. their way up. And obviously when you get into the V8 version, you get more features on the vehicle as well. So that being said, the Defender 90 V8 is going to be $95,000, $95,550. And then the long wheelbase, the Defender 110, is $101,750. So call it $99,102.
I can't get used to those numbers. Even though I have a very valuable Land Rover, I just can't get used to those numbers. And I think about that when I'm leaving it untended outside in the snow and ice, and I don't bother to clean the snow off for a couple days, and I let the snowblower shoot over the top, which sprays a side of it with mud. And then I'm washing it 4 weeks later going, oh, shoot, you know, I should probably take better care of this. It's worth as much as my house. I'm not used to these numbers, man. I'm a budget guy.
Right. I mean, you and I especially, we dabble a lot in older cars and used cars.
Yeah, and then put that much into them.
Yeah,
forget.
Yeah, yeah. But at least it's, the sting is gone because it's like, it's a little here, it's the whole idea of buying Snap-on tools.
It's
right?
that big check that the pen just won't write. You're like, my pen just won't write this. It's dead.
when you get that Snap-on toolbox and you walk outside and you realize you have $85,000 worth of tools, but you're like, but I didn't write an $85,000 check all at once because that would be insane. So
this is 30 years of collecting.
Yeah, I eased into it. But at least it's an asset and those are sellable as well. But the base Defender 90 and the base Defender 110 are about $50,000. It's like $49,000 and like $51,000. So,
That's fine.
So you can kind of work from there. And like, you know, to your point, you know, in a year or two, or, you know, a lot of people are buying them and leasing them like we do. Mm-hmm. There's write-offs and things like that.
Yeah.
People do on average a 3-year lease. So we're a year into this vehicle, and in two years, there's going to be a lot of lease returns.
And we're seeing a lot of these on the road. At least in our neck of the woods, there's a lot of them on the road. Yeah.
And I'm sure you're going to be able to get a nice 2-, 3-, 4-year-old version of it. Probably still some sort of, you know, certified pre-owned factory warranty, you know, extended warranty version. Yeah. And it'll be pretty nice vehicle. I liked it. I like driving it. It's a little, you know, it's like, it's a little showy for like the Beverly Hills vehicle. And I don't have the off-road, you know, nature in me. Like I don't have anywhere near that. I just don't go anywhere, you know, from LA to go and do that. So for me, I wouldn't be able to use it the way it would. Like I would be more down for like a sport truck than I would be for like a Raptor or Defender 90. I'm not going to take it out in the dirt, which is why I've got a Lightning here that's been lowered and it's going to get lowered again.
Well, I have to say, at what price point is $100,000, a new $100,000 Rover, the off-road guys purchase, you know, I mean, it's I'm curious who that market is. You know, right. I mean, like you were saying, I'm going to wait a few years before I really consider one. You know, I'm really happy with my Defender. For those of you who don't know, I have an NAS 110, which I got very affordably and put some money into it. Now I built a full on overlander. So there's kind of photos all over on our media, but it's a wonderful machine. So it's kind of quasi vintage, but really well equipped. And it's got a TD5, which is kind of unobtainium. It's a real powerhouse. So I'm a real Defender hardcore enthusiast. I've restored several series Land Rovers, and I love them. So, it's like, what would get me to buy one of these? I don't know, man. It's going to be a while, I think. I'm curious. I'd love to own one. I haven't heard anything bad from owners. I mean, they're very cool. They're beautiful, but it's gonna take me a little while. I'm not ready to spend that kind of money.
But have you been in it yet or driven it yet?
No. And I've refrained because I know I'll want one.
Yes. But let me tell you, it's like, I had the one and I drove it, and it was sort of a welcomed surprise for me to say, that it wasn't like a full-size Range Rover. It wasn't, I mean, don't get me wrong on this, but it wasn't beautiful leather and stitching everywhere.
Right.
Like it did have a utilitarian kind of feel to it while still being up class. Like, so, so here's the thing. It's like, you're going to get into one, I think, and Misha as well, and say, this is actually a pretty good blend of how we do use vehicles, but to reliably get into it and have some things work and take it to dinner and have a quiet conversation in the vehicle on the
you'd want to hose it out first,
you know, on the longer road trips, you know, look, when you're, you know, like you said, you're going to Monterey or something like that, or going to Vegas or going to SEMA, and you're like, yeah, you know, what are we going to drive that's actually comfortable and quiet and
going to take the Macan.
Yeah. Take the Macan. You take the Macan.
Yeah. Cause it fits in a parking garage too. Otherwise I'd take my Defender. I love driving that thing. No cruise control, shitty air conditioning, shitty heating, surprisingly comfortable seat, nowhere to put your elbows, steering wheel. You tend to run the lower half, lower quarter of it. For some reason, that's just the happy place. It's a bit of a reach on the shift. Pedals are stiff. You know, it's windy, it's noisy, but I freaking love it.
Yeah.
It's a great Dane. It's a great Dane of dogs.
my truck, the Lightning, is ridiculously loud, which is okay because there's a fix for that, right? Like I spoke to our guys at MagnaFlow. And oh no, I mean, I've got two layers of sound deadening material in it. I've got two layers of sound deadening. Hush mat in it, all the entire. Yeah,
me too. There's like three layers of random sound deadening throughout the whole truck.
and the guys at MagnaFlow, when we get the new engine and everything, it needs to be the last thing that we do. They are going to do the full test on it and do the, you know, the resonator chamber and the sound reduction.
That's
like
so
you have
cool.
to cancel sounds and.
Yeah, man, that is some cool high tech stuff. The sound and noise canceling technology is real. Every time I put on my Kicker headphones with the sound deadening, you know, the noise canceling, I always trip because I'm like, man, I don't understand how it works because I don't hear any other white noise. It's canceling it. You know, it's you expect it.
Which is fantastic on an airplane, right?
Yes. You know. Anywhere, even any kind of loud noise or resonating noise or atmospheric noise, you know, but in an exhaust system, you know, you hear about the resonators and all this thing. Yeah. It's really true that they cancel out noises, and it's really a cool technology.
They do. They find that drone and then they build a chamber that it sort of goes near the exhaust. And it just cancels that out. So it's a way of still like at full throttle, you want to get that aggressive sound. But when you're cruising, you want to eliminate that drone and kind of make it quiet without doing it with an active chamber, right? Without doing it with an active valve. You can do it with this resonance chamber, which is kind of cool. So they're going to do the experimentation and stuff on that. But like you were saying, it's bumpy as all hell. Like it is absolutely. I mean, the twin I-beam suspension, the leaf springs in the back, and then the fact that I did lower it already has a much stiffer shock, and it'll just knock your teeth out. So I'm going to do a new suspension on it.
Well, I can't say the Rover is stiff suspension. It's got that typical Rover. It's a little soft. It's a little mushy. You know, it's got some body roll in the corners, but it still seems to hold its line, you know. It's,
Well,
that's because you have like, 30-inch wheels on that thing with the half an inch profile?
not too crazy. No, actually, because I wanted sidewall on it. I didn't want that crazy. I didn't want to put 20s, 22s.
Rubber bands.
No, it's an 18. And we went with the 18s just because there's a lot of tire sizes in 18. Yeah. And I wanted to clear the brakes. But I got I got 4 inches of sidewall. Yeah. I got a
it looks good.
Tire. Yeah.
But nowadays you could put 4 inches of sidewall and still get grip and handling because the tire compounds are so good. You know?
So I've been putting together a team, if you will, for the suspension for this truck. And I was going to wait a little longer until I got into it. But I'm going to basically just kind of tease it right now because when the new engine goes in, the plan was always to redo the suspension on the truck. And then, of course, weigh it because we're changing the weight, aluminum engine and everything. So we're changing all the spring rates. I wanted to go to coilovers. And for the life of me, I could not find a good bolt-in suspension for this truck. There really isn't much available for it. Like, you can do a drop kit and things like that. But you know, there isn't anything like a Detroit engineering kit or a Hotchkiss kit or something like that. So
interesting.
I was able to actually put a team together, and these are fabricators at different companies, but they all happen to work together. They've all done projects and stuff together. So,
That's cool.
And it came together really good. Actually, one guy was like a referral to another guy, and it worked out. So it starts with, a company called Porterbilt, and Porterbilt, manufacturers chassis and suspension components, but they don't really sell much. They use a company called Fat Fender Garage in Arizona, who sells their stuff, especially the Ford kits. So Porterbilt is kind of their partner who does all the CAD engineering, and then Fat Fender Garage does a lot of the installation, and they sell the kits and support the kits.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
And if you think about it, even a group like Ring Brothers, they have a partner company like next door to them that does a lot of the carbon fiber development and runs all the CNC machines and makes a lot of their parts for them that they help design, but then they handle the retail sales and the builds, and they have a machine shop. So Porterbilt is essentially the CAD engineer in the machine shop. Fat Fender Garage is, you know, the retailer and the testing company. And they have a four-link rear suspension with a Panhard rod, which will eliminate my leaf springs and allow me to use a coilover.
Oh, right, so, game changer.
Right.
Big
so
time.
That's step one. And step two, there's a group, a small fab shop, four or five guys in Canada called Epic Customs, and they have a bolt-in IFS. They have an independent front suspension K-member with a rack and pinion steering conversion for these Ford trucks. And they designed it around a McGoffey's, I think it is, a McGoffey's drop spindle. Which is interesting is they use a Dodge Ram drop spindle because it has the same bolt pattern as the Ford wheel.
Wait, sounds like you're building a rat rod. This sounds like my 27.
It kind of does that. So there's a lot of components coming together.
Does it have Ford spindles, but a Chevy kingpins and a Dodge front bar?
So what this is basically going to do is I'm going to get rid of the I-beams. I'm going to get rid of the steering box. And as you guys knew, I upgraded the steering box. It was all meant to be temporary. But now you're getting a little bit into my wheelhouse, pardon the pun, is it has basically a bolt-in, or it's a weld-in front clip. It's almost like a K-member engine mounts. It has upper and lower control arms with coilovers. But it also uses a modern rack and pinion steering. And without me saying anything, guess which car the rack and pinion steering is from?
Uh-oh.
Yes, a Fox Body Mustang. So I've already
privilege from you, Matt. I know how much you love those words.
I've already done so many of these already. So
it's going to have very heavy steering, is what you're saying.
No, it's not. It's not. Now, listen, I'm going to tell you why. I know that's what you were thinking. When I did my Mustang Cobra, I used a Maximum Motorsports K member. And at the time, they only used the stock Mustang or the Terminator Cobras, like the, you know, the 03, 04 Cobra steering racks. But they're getting harder to get. So I teamed up with Flaming River, who makes a brand new, not rebuilt, quick ratio power steering rack for the Mustang.
Right. That's the one you've been talking about for a while.
Yes. And I got Maximum Motorsports together with Flaming River, and they made a little modifications to the K member. So now the Flaming River rack works with their K member when you ask specifically you're going to use the two.
And not reversed.
right. There's just like slightly different spacers just because of the housing. There's like a billet housing on the Flaming River rack. You have to space it out a little differently. So again, I'm going to attempt to do something similar. The guys at Epic Customs, I'm going to get them together with Flaming River. I'm going to send a Flaming River steering rack to those guys. So if they can get it to work, again, it should bolt in no problem, but it could be just like a spacing issue, right? Because the steering rack on the Flaming River is like a little bit larger billet, like cylinder, and it needs, you know, on the Mustang, it needed like an eighth inch spacer, quarter inch spacer. That is all it really needed. So if that works, then it's kind of a win-win. I get a brand new quick ratio steering rack out of the deal, get to work with Flaming River, who I've worked with. And now Epic can say, hey, maybe I want to be a dealer. And if somebody doesn't have a used rack or wants something different, you can upgrade to this rack. So
can of worms, Matt. Can of worms.
But here's no. It's gonna get Aaron. Oh,
These shows stress me out, man.
Listen, that's the simple part. From here, it's gonna get wildly complicated. This is gonna get wildly complicated. Okay.
So
I've got this four link. Right, that's the mechanical bits. I got the four link in the rear. I've got this new IFS for the front, which will go in with the new engine, right? New motor mounts and the whole thing. So, but now we get into the coilover shocks. And I've worked a few times with my friends at JRI Shocks. It's a very good quality shock. Do a lot in the racing world, rebuildable, you know, shocks. And I went to them and I said, I've got some ideas on doing a coilover shock. First, I do want an adjustable coilover. And they said, no problem. We can do that all day long. We've got single, double, whatever you want. And I said, I'm also interested in controlling ride height a little bit. Now, I don't want airbags. I don't want anything like that. I said, what I envision in my head is something more modern, like the front axle lift on a Porsche or a McLaren. But
yeah.
Right. I want an electronically controlled adjustable height. And they said, yes, we do have that. So it is a coilover. Right. And then you have the spring perches on the coilover and it's in a billet sleeve, the coilover itself. The top of the sleeve has a motor in it and it extends.
That's right. We've talked about
and
something
shrinks,
like this.
Right. Yeah, and it has I don't know, like 3 or 4 or 5 inches of travel or something like that. It's so it's not like airbags and it's literally like
it's mechanical.
As a matter of fact, I think they have it as an option on an Ariel Atom. If you want an Ariel Atom to go up your driveway, you hit the button and like the McLaren, it'll lift the front of the vehicle. But it doesn't change the spring rate or the compression or rebound settings on the coilover because it moves the coilover housing. It doesn't change the spring at all. So
You can drive on it.
So you can drive on it. So what it won't do is it won't be like, hey, I'm going to take this thing to a car show, deflate the airbags and put the frame on the floor. It's not that, but it does give me some travel. So I can set let's say a normal ride height. I can set, you know, an inch or hot or two higher if I need it, you know, parking garage, tow truck, whatever. But also I can drop it like an inch or two and make it work. So let's say I'm going to hit the track or do something like that. I can lower it a little bit. Now, this
is that's cool. So it's not
system,
just for raising from a stock height. It's
right.
You can also.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to set a middle tune and be able to go up and down.
Sure.
You know, like 2 inches up, 2 inches down. I think I can do something like that.
Oh, so you can. Oh, that's very cool. So you can actually drive for long periods of time with it raised or in a mid setting, not just bottomed out.
Right. Yeah. You can set it and forget it if you want to.
That's cool. Because you can't do that with a ride height with a lift system in a supercar. So you can't do that. You can't drive very far.
You know? Right. You can. you can drive, but once it hits like over 35 or 38 miles an hour, it lowers the front end.
Right.
But also, like when you get into those McLarens, when you hit like a 80, 90 mile an hour speed, it puts it, it lowers the car more into an aerodynamic, like high speed mode. That's basically what I'm trying to do with the trunk.
Awesome.
Now the front and rear suspensions that we talked about, both of those kits are designed for airbags or coilovers. So the clearance issues around control arms and stuff, because airbags were in mind, it can sit down on the ground. So the idea of me doing an adjustable height suspension is super easy for these guys because they have the option of airbags or not. Now, that sounds like it's the complicated part. That is not the complicated part. A word from our friends at Geico. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. The other supercar thing that I wanted to put in this was
The whole front end of the car slope at a 40 degree angle so that you can get better aerodynamics. Now, does the windshield come back too on that?
Yeah, I wish
so
the
it's
whole
not
thing,
a flying brick.
I wish the whole thing would change shape like that. Oh, active aero. Let me look into
BMW
active aero.
BMW can do it. BMW's got it. They've got a soft shell body and they've got all these little things that come out and change the body lines. It's pretty cool.
You know, when you think about active aero, I don't need to change the shape of the truck. The big thing would be if I can do active aero in the front grill at high speed, start to close off the grill.
Yeah, to close off the grill. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it just, the engine compartment doesn't become a huge air pocket, right?
That's out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of cars are doing that. And there's a probably a version of that I can do. Right. It should be interesting.
Well, let me know if you need any help brainstorming. Yeah.
Okay. So to finish my point on the yes. suspension there is a system that JRI has called J-Ride that is, it's adjustable shocks that we talked about, but now there's an 8-inch touchscreen LCD that can go in the vehicle and completely control the rebound and compression of the shocks. I can program it any way I want. And then I can set presets like a modern day car. I can have normal mode, sport mode, track mode, drag race mode. Wow. And I believe I can control the ride height with those modes. So in normal mode, I can sit X high and get a soft ride. And then when I go, track, truck lower, suspension tightens up, I'm in track mode. If I want to hit drag race mode, I can simulate like a Coney 50-50 in a rear and like a 90-10 in the front, get some weight shifting going on, completely controlled from within the vehicle.
So what you're saying is you're truly going back to the era of multi-screens in your vehicle. You're going to have all these different screens to control all this difference. are you going to put those on the headliner? Are you going to put them in the glove box? Where are you going to put all these?
I have no idea, but this is how you buy a $14,000 truck and do a $25,000 suspension system.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, Matt, I was thinking of you the other day because we were driving through Napa and I saw a white, but it was a GT now. It was probably 87, a Mustang GT, but it was that white, that stellar white with all the louvers, and it was low, and a kid got out of it. And I was cracking up because I'm like, all right, well, it's not the sleeper GT. It was like the full on body kitted one,
person getting in the car. Like
that was definitely one of the upsides it was perfect. It was clean. It looked restored and a young guy got out of it. So I'm thinking, wow, I hope it was his dad's or something, or his grandpa's at this point,
just some influence from the family or something, or car shows as a kid.
It even had those stock wheels on it. The ones with a 6-inch circle in the middle and then it had all the fins along the outside.
Yeah, the turbine.
Yeah, the turbine wheels. It even had the turbine wheels. And then we were in St. Helena and I saw it must have been a early 80s. I mean, mint. This thing, it was an ugly one, so it had to be early 80s. Station wagon, like the big, giant, long-ass, yeah, wide girth station wagon. Lowered a little bit, no fancy wheels. I don't even remember the wheels, but I remember it was lowered a little bit, had a satin clear on what looked like a factory color, and it had the wood panel sides, you know, some tinted windows, but it didn't sound like it was all, blah, 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 you know. Yeah. It was a sleeper, and I gotta say, like I said, it wasn't a pretty one. It had this dual square, you know, headlights and all that, but I have to appreciate that people are really bringing these things back to life or preserving them. This one looked preserved, like, hey, the paint's good. We're just going to satin clear it, you know? Mm-hmm. It wasn't really in patina. It looked pretty damn cherry, but it kind of looked original.
Wrapped. I wonder if it was a satin wrap.
Maybe. Unfortunately, we were both moving, so I didn't get a good look at it other than just a quick three-quarter view, but I was real impressed. I love seeing this stuff, you know, whether it's your truck or the Fox Bodies or heck, you talk about the Ring Brothers, that beautiful Ring Brothers Mercury that they're doing or did. I love this stuff. I'm definitely a classic car guy to the bone, and I love that people are putting money into them while we can. I'm not sure what the future holds, so you know, it's great that this may be the golden age of or the gilded age of automotive, classic automotive, you know.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Ring Brothers and a Mercury, and that was on of our list of things. They did a 68 Mercury
Matt.
Cougar it was a lovely transition. Thank you, Aaron. I if you look at this car, it's pretty. They did a good job. Shoved the Coyote engine into it. But a little different than the normal Ring Brothers car, right?
Because it doesn't look that modified.
it's just like a really, really nice restoration of a car.
Yeah.
That happens to have their attention to detail and their fitment and their, but not overly billet stuff, a chrome window trim. And it's a really nice piece.
It really is a resto mod. I mean, you know, there's a couple, look at the pedals, that they're kind of like a quasi modern, you know, GT pedal, but you know, you can see they did some design on the shifter because it obviously has a different transmission, but you know, that's a Shelby style steering wheel. Even the window knobs and the mirror adjuster, those are stock, that's stock hardware. You know, the seats look like stock, you know, the back part of the center panel, the vertical part with the clock and the radio, those look like stock pieces. You know, this is like a true kind of sleeper resto mod.
You know, and they kind of did this on their K5 Chevy Blazer as well. They did one of those for somebody, and it had a lot of kind of stock pieces.
You want it to be familiar when you open the door, and it's all exotic. Sometimes it takes away from what you're driving, but you know what you're driving because if you look at the gear selector in this thing, it's ultra modern. It's like, ooh, look at this. Oh, that says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does,
like,
a little
like
bit.
Nipple actually, rings. The like gear, nipple rings, you know?
The gear selector doesn't exactly fit in the vehicle, but it's, you know, it's got the modern day 10-speed transmission in it. You know?
Yeah. And the AC vents look a little modern, but that's badass, man.
It looks good. So if you guys want, take a look. Just Google search Ring Brothers Mercury Cougar. I'm sure it'll
just Google. If you want to go down the rabbit hole, just Google search Ring Brothers, man. You'll find something that you like.
We talked about the Land Rover, and as we were talking about that, I wanted to add this in on the topic of off-roading. You know, Jeep announced their Wrangler Rubicon 392, the V8 powered truck. You know, they said they weren't going to do a Hellcat version, right? Because they have so many Hellcat vehicles. So why not do a badass off-road, naturally aspirated version? And that's what they did. It's 470 horsepower V8. it's got the Fox 2.0 off-road shocks, 2-inch suspension lift, 33-inch tires, and all the good stuff on it. But to get there, It's $75,000, which is interesting because I'm pretty sure $75,000 is more than the base price of the Ram TRX, which does have that big Hellcat engine in it. So the pickup truck with 710 horsepower is less money than the Jeep Wrangler with 470 horsepower. So you're going to have to really like Jeeps to get this.
Hey, I mean, don't Jeep's get me wrong. A dedicated crowd, man. They're dedicated. You know?
It, don't get me wrong. It looks badass. The hood is cool. The power is fantastic. It looks mean. It looks like it would be a lot of fun and
gonna sound good,
and it's gonna sound good. So, anyway, to get into that world, it's gonna cost you about $75,000.
Yeah, you know those Jeeps. I really like those Jeeps, and when you had that one at when we did the show last year or something, or no more long ago. Anyway, a year or so ago. And you let me drive around the block. That thing was really nice. They have come a long way. They have come a long way. I mean, we have that CJ5. Anything's come a long way. A Willys actually tries better than that thing at times. But they have really come a long way, and I really like those Jeeps. There, I kind of just wish they weren't so expensive. But they are stellar, man. And with the V8. That solves a lot of problems.
Yeah, it seems like it. And look, when you get the V8 from the factory, you know, you're getting it with the warranty, and you're getting it with whatever the necessary little upgrades they felt were, you know, not just motor mounts, but maybe there's some, you know, upgrades to suspension, bushings, just things to toughen up, little gusseting here and there, just the things that the factory is able to do.
Yeah, no, true.
So definitely cool to look at, you know, but it is a chunk of change. So you'd have to really kind of commit to wanting something like that. But then again, I don't know that they're going to sell a ton of them. So you might end up with something that's a little special, a little rare, might be able to hold its value a little bit better than.
Well, you know, Jeeps are impressive the way they hold their value. I mean, I bought my brother and I pitched in and bought my mom a Jeep a couple of years ago, an older Wrangler. And what was it? It was a 2005, I think, had reasonably low miles, was in good shape. And man, that thing was almost 20 grand. You know, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy. But, cause it was the right color and combination too, that, you know, mom got to take care of the mama. But, you know, our Grand Cherokee, we have a 2011 with just under 200,000 miles on it. I've been starting to, man, I've been bragging about that car for years because it's been so good. And then last year I had to dump a bunch of money into it because the front end was starting to go and the whole cooling system went and the whole AC went. And you know, it's like I've towed with it. I mean, I literally in an emergency when SoCal Speed Shop shut down after Pete passed away, I had to go get Red Voodoo and I borrowed a heavy ass steel trailer. And I went there in a half a day's notice and picked up Red Voodoo and towed it back with that six cylinder base model Grand Cherokee Laredo. And on the grapevine, it went into kind of a safety mode, which was interesting. So it wouldn't let me go over a certain RPM. The temperature went up like halfway and then it just rode there like 45 miles per hour going up the hill. You could hear the extra fans come on. You know, I was in a panic the first time. But as soon as I crest the top and started to roll down the other side, all that turned off and the temp went down immediately and off we went. I didn't even have a brake controller on there. And I got to say, other than a couple scary stops, it did the job. But man, would I like a V8 in that thing. Anyway, long story short, I'm thinking when that motor starts to get a little more tired real soon, I might just try to find an Overland version that had the V8 in it and just drop it in. So I'm kind of doing research to see what else I need to do. Like you said, how much I need to upgrade to put that V8 in it, because the body's perfect. The interior's perfect. The wear and tear on the inside is like zero. Every button, every switch, every knob, every handle, it looks brand new. There's no paint rubbing off of anything. The seats aren't cracked. They're leather. And I put the seats in leather, but kudos to Catskins. But, you know, it's perfect. So why throw away a car that's got many miles in it because the engine's done? Throw a beat.
Yeah.
And up here in Tahoe, there's no emissions issue. So once you buy the vehicle, you register it, and that's your emissions until you sell it. So if we're going to keep this truck, I can put whatever I want in it.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Certainly when you get into that kind of miles, you do need to pay attention to, you know, shocks and springs and bushings.
I just did all that. That's what I mean. I had to put like $6,000 into this thing to get all that done because it had some funk in the front end. And so we just redid everything. And so it's pretty fresh. The transmission's still good, but it's pretty fresh, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, pretty much anything can be restored back to its original condition, right?
Yeah.
Like Leno has very famously said that he enjoys driving his cars. He drives his cars. Yep. Yeah, exactly that. Drive it
very
down
admirable.
And restore it back
very
up.
Yeah. Well, it just takes money.
Yeah. Someday he'll make it. Someday that guy will make
That's why we love pick and pull.
Yeah, right? all right. Well, we are running out of time here, so we're going to wrap some things up. And, you know, we'll be back next week, though. We'll catch up with Brad, see how his little road trip was. Yeah. It's always a fiasco when he goes to Arizona and back for some reason. I don't know why, but it usually has something going on.
Can I throw a few things out?
Yes, of course.
So we saw our first Bronco Sport. Yes. In fact, we saw three of them running around St. Helena in Napa County. One still had the plastic on it, three different colors. There was a dark silvery gray, a black, and I think a tan. And good looking little SUV. It's kind of like a Ford Escape, I think, a little beefier, but real lean inside, real simple, but nice. Nice and look good on the road. Yeah.
It's a good little off-roader as well. They put a lot of attention in the goat modes that they have and the off-road capability. I went off-roading with it and it seemed fun. You know, I went as part of a Ford program, but it was fun.
Really nice. And then my wife for 2 days was going, there it is. Oh, you missed it again. There it is. Oh, you missed it again. And finally, on the last day, we're driving out because it was right across the street at the Ford dealership. And sure enough, parked in the EV section, was the new Mach-E, black on black. And I got to say, that looks good in person.
It does
that
look good. Good. Yeah,
it looks good. I didn't see it driving down the street. My wife did. She said, she was like, what is it? I don't think it's she was asking, it was a Lamborghini Uranus, a Lamborghini Urus.
Urus.
And I said, I don't know. It's Napa, maybe, you know, but I didn't hear it. But she actually thought it was an exotic car, and she's a car girl. But it went, you know, she just got a glimpse and it looked very exotic to her. So I have to say it looks a little exotic. It's a good looking.
They did a good job on the styling. It is fun to drive. I can't wait to get into the performance edition of it. And when you get up close on it, you'll see this swoopy profile on the bodywork. That's the colored bodywork, but the rear has a blacked out section that is a little bit taller. So
right. When you have better headroom,
more storage capacity, cargo capacity.
Yeah.
But they did a great job with subtly hiding that element, especially when you get it in the bright colors, the, you know, the grabber blue or something like that. It looks good. It's new for them. So I don't know if they're going to have issues sort of in the first year, but for now they seem to make a pretty good vehicle. Everybody likes it. Everyone testing it is a fan. It has a lot of like over the air updates and things like that, that do help a lot, right? Because especially on an EV, almost any issue, except for a few mechanical things, right? Like suspension bushings or whatever, can be fixed electronically over the air. Like you just
so cool. Anything with a computer chip in it, basically.
Yeah, but you don't even need to take it. You don't need to take it into the dealer. They, you know, you get up in the morning and you go, and the car tells you, "Thank you. It's just been upgraded." It's like your laptop or your iPhone. You know, it's just
been upgraded. So cool. So it recognizes me now. And then speaking of technology, Marin. I love Marin for this because like, oh, look, there's a, and there's just everything there and great abundance. Yeah. I've never seen more Teslas other than at the factory.
Yeah.
But we saw a mystery car and we actually texted you last night and you were throwing some names at us too. And then, late last night, sorry about the late text. I was all excited because, Misha was looking for hours and, I found it in about 10 minutes. Because I started chasing down a Volvo because I kind of recognized the headlights, but we saw a Polestar 2, which I had never even heard of. And what a cool car. It's like a, I think it's a prototype it was like a prototype, a Volvo design that they didn't use for Volvo, but they used it for Polestar, which was kind of like the AMG version of what a cool looking, that thing's beefy, man. It looked good.
Yeah, so Volvo's high performance line was Polestar, but now they've spun that out as a standalone EV brand. Polestar 2 that you saw is their mainstream like consumer car. It's the $40,000, something like that car.
Starts at like 40-50 grand.
But they have a Polestar 1.
That thing was cool looking.
Which is a gorgeous
coupe.
But now this is like $150,000. It is absolutely lovely.
It really is cool.
I did get a chance to get that thing and drive it and take photos with it. On the Polestar.
Well, I've never seen or heard from it. And I don't remember you talking about it unless I just went in one ear out the other because it was so, unfamiliar. But in my research, I was looking up, because I started going new brand logos, new EVs, new 2021, just trying to go down the rabbit hole of searching. And there's a lot of new car companies and for EVs and for alternative transportation. Man, it is really blossoming in the next year or two. I'm really getting more excited about what's out there. It's cool. But yeah, I've been seeing all kinds of stuff I've never seen before on the street. It was pretty cool. Yeah. Cause up in Tahoe, it's covered wagons and donkeys and, we don't see many cars up here.
Someday you guys get a gas station. That's not like a feed trough.
We do have some hitching posts outside of some of the.
I figured you would. We're gonna wrap things up.
I wish we had more time, but I love it.
We do not.
I like doing the show still, Matt. I like doing the show still.
Well, me too. So we'll get Brad next week, I believe. And then we're going to do some updates. We mentioned Barrett Jackson and Scottsdale the end of March. And I believe I just got an email saying that Barrett Jackson in Vegas is.
I've been getting lots of stuff from Merritt on that.
Jackson, one. Vegas. And let me just see if I've got the information. I saw it here somewhere. It's going to be in June. I think it's going to be mid June.
Right.
I don't have the exact, date in front of me. We got to look it up, but it was just announced and it's going to be at the new expansion building of the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Right. Finally done.
Yeah, that's done.
Right. Finally done.
SEMA is going to be there as well. Expanded in there, but, a cool event for Barrett Jackson to be in that new location.
Yeah.
Instead of one of the hotels or something, right?
Front and center. I feel pretty good about SEMA this year too. I think last year there was a lot of speculation early on, but I think everybody's organized enough that I think they're going to be able to pull it off this year.
I'll tell you something about Barrett Jackson. They are going above and beyond what you can imagine to make the Scottsdale event as safe as possible.
Yeah.
They have UV lights in the air, the antibacterial killing UV lights. And then they've teamed up with a company where they fly drones over the audience and it mists a disinfectant in the air as well. They're going to fly drones and UV lights above people. You could be naked with the plague in the middle of this event and the guy next to you is going to be fine.
So basically you're going to leave with a cough and a sunburn.
It's just going to be fantastic what they're doing to make this above and beyond.
Don't wear black shirts because you will see the dandruff.
Everyone's teeth are going to be glowing with black lights. No. Yeah. I don't think it's that way.
It's going to be a neon party.
It's going to be fantastic.
Let's hope that what they do is gonna give a lot of other people ideas and help us get through SEMA and CES and some of these other big mass, you know, events that we'd want to avoid during this time of our lives, but we're all anxious to get back to. So, So let's hope that some of those safety protocols rocket and we get to do some fun stuff this year. So.
Awesome. Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate it as always. Yeah. And we're going to wrap things up. You guys can find us at shiftandsteer.com. You can find me at Motorator on social media, pretty much anywhere. And Aaron, just Google Aaron Hay.
Yeah, you can find me by name.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.